It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And let's do that. Let's talk legal. And with us on the phone live is Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. A long time no talk. I trust you had a good Thanksgiving and looking forward to a Merry Christmas.
Yes, yes. We're doing great, but I'll tell you, we are wide open. It's been very, very busy, and it's a little bit of a mystery because, of course, people are very concerned about COVID and the economy, and it's just created a lot of circumstances where people are needing to talk to their lawyers. So we've been very, very busy, which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing, and it just illustrates the point, Cecil, that despite what's happening in our current events, life moves on, and your civil matters, sometimes there are deadlines that cannot be changed, and you have to just, you know, continue to persevere and move forward, and that's why it's good to have good legal counsel like Harvell and Collins.
So today I thought that we would talk about the structure of a last will and testament. There is most definitely a structure to that document, and so let's kind of dissect that
sure.
a little bit. The structure of a last will and testament would begin, interestingly, with a very simple sentence that says that, you know, I hereby revoke all prior last will and testaments and codicils made by me, and I declare this to be my very last will and testament. So that's a very important provision. It's usually up at the front of the document, and it is kind of paragraph one in terms of, yes, let's make sure that we know that this really is the last will and that it revoked any prior wills.
The next provision in
a will would be the disposition or the handling of tangible personal property. And that is things, Mike, that we can touch and feel. We're not talking about bank accounts. We're not talking about stocks or bonds or land or houses. We're talking about tangible personal property, furniture, jewelry, things in the home, anything that we can pick up and walk out the door with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's tangible. Now, this provision usually leaves the tangible property to, depends on the client, of course, and the circumstances, but maybe to the children, maybe to the major beneficiary in the will, you know, a brother or sister, whoever the major beneficiary is. But more importantly, with regard to this article in the will, Mike, is the concept that we lawyers no longer, you know, put in the will that, you know, I hereby give, you know, this pattern of silver to such and such,
right.
and this pattern of china, and this diamond ring, and this, you know, this set of, you know, this set of golf clubs, things of that nature. Of course, we recognize that that, quote, stuff can be very valuable, but it's best that that be handled by a memorandum, a separate writing, separate and distinct from the will, written out in your handwriting that just simply kind of gives your family some guidelines about where you want your tangible things to go. So your will would have a provision that says that I may leave a memorandum, although not written in my will, and I request that my executor abide by the terms of this memorandum. So it's kind of like a side agreement that works really well because you can change it and modify it without, you know, having to come back to see your lawyer. And now I want to be very, very particular here. I'm only speaking about tangible property. You can't include in that memo things about your CD or your money or this particular, you know, stock certificate or anything like that. This is just about things. But the way to handle that is in a separate document, and then, of course, your executor will abide by that.
If you write that that memorandum and then change it later, you're saying it doesn't affect. I mean, it's not part of the will. It's an addendum. It's an addendum to the will, or an extra to the will.
It's a memorandum. Yes.
Does that need legal fingerprints on it when you make an alteration to it later, months, years, whatever? Afterwards, you write the initial one.
You just write it out in your handwriting.
Okay.
And you sign it and you date it.
Okay.
And the reason that we ask that it be in your handwriting, and that is important because this day and age everyone loves to use the computer.
Sure.
But if it's in mom or dad's handwriting or grandmother's handwriting or whoever the testator might be, the bottom line there is that everyone recognizes it to be the handwriting,
sure.
And therefore it's been authenticated.
Very good. And I like the way you describe it, things you can carry out. So it does not include the 40 acres of farmland, but it does include the garage full of Testarossas and Mustangs. We could divide
Correct.
That. We could divide
That's
that.
Right.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
Interesting. Very good.
So now after one completes the disposition or the giving of the tangible personal property, the next question would be, are there any specific bequests? Does the testator, does grandmama want to give, $10,000 to each grandchild, for instance? Is there a particular piece of property that's going to a particular child? A particular lot or block in a particular place. Is there something very specific that's going to a particular beneficiary, be it money, be it land, whatever it might be? This is known as a specific bequest. And a lot of times there aren't specific bequests. They are a little bit rare in speaking about the structure of a will. Most items are going to fall under the next section, which I'm about to talk about. So maybe we will talk about that section and then go back to see if there's something specific. The next section, Mike, is really the guts, if you will, the real crucial portion of a will known as the residue. And the residue means whatever else there is, be it money in the bank, stocks, bonds, whatever property I own, a timeshare, a condominium, whatever it happens to be, I hereby divide by the following beneficiaries. And, of course, if they're children, equally to my three children. If it's to brothers and sisters, to my two brothers and my one sister. If it's to a charity, then, to the American Red Cross. I mean, this is your residual beneficiary. This is your rest, residue, and remainder of your estate. It's the crux of your estate. It's the essence of your estate. And now you're directing where it goes. So to back up a bit, anything that's specifically devised would not go into the residuary because you heretofore have said in a specific bequest that I hereby give this particular piece of property, to this particular person or to this particular charity. And then the next section says all the rest, residue, and remainder of property that I otherwise have not dealt with, I hereby give as follows. It's called the residuary clause. Very, very an important clause.
Very good. The residuary clause. And it's, so when you do that, that's now baked into the will. And of course, like anything, that can change. If you write the will at a certain period of your life, things change down the road. You can make, changes to the residuary clause, correct?
Yes, you can. You can make changes to any of these provisions. Absolutely you can. Until such time as either, of course, we're not living or we become, lack the legal capacity, due to illness or accident or old age or whatever the case might be, where we're unable to make, a will because of lacking of legal capacity to make out a last will and testament. But it's absolutely changeable. Just yesterday, I got the question from a gentleman who was signing his will in our office, and he said, "Now, I want you to go ahead and record my will, Cecil." And I, of course, have to say to him, well, you know, Mr. Jones, we don't record wills now because you're still living and you're doing great and you may change this will at some point. So a will is not recorded until such time as there is a death. Now, we can keep it in a safe place. We can also place it at the courthouse in, quote, safekeeping. We can also keep it in the vault or safety deposit box. But we really are not, the clerk of court will not accept a will and record it until there's a death certificate. And the big reason for that is what we're talking about right now, which is that it can always be changed.
And I imagine that you see, I mean, I guess some of the pitfalls people could fall into is they create a will and they think they're done until they die, but life changes in their life, career, they may sell the business, they may get divorced, have more children. A lot of different variables play into why they need to come back and get their will revised. Do you find that people sometimes forget to do that? With life changes that have occurred, and now they have a will that doesn't really reflect their present condition?
Yes, that happens, Mike. And when, of course, the general rule is that we want clients to kind of dust off their will and look at it, you know, their copy, that is, their photostatic copy. They don't have to keep the original, you know, right there in the home desk drawer. But if you can keep a copy, then every 5 to 7 years, it's nice to bring that out and look at it. And just make sure that it still is kind of following the following your intention. Now, one of the questions that's lurking out there, I'm sure, with listeners is that, well, don't I need to talk about, you know, ABC Street? Don't I need to talk about, you know, XYZ Corporation? Don't I need to talk about my bank account at Wells Fargo or my Edward Jones account or my AG Edwards or Merrill Lynch or whatever it happens to be? And the answer is no, you don't, because what changes very routinely are those things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, let's go back and think about what we're saying here. The provision says all the rest, residue, and remainder of my estate I hereby devise to my wife, my children, my grandchildren, my brother, my sister. So all the rest, residue, and remainder picks up, if you will, gathers up, marshals together these assets, puts them in the residuary box, and then we distribute the box. So it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, this particular stock company or that particular bank or this particular property, and yet we then turned around and bought another piece of property. That's going to all be included in that residuary. Anything and everything that we happen to own is going to get marshaled together and put in the residuary box. And I, as the lawyer, and you as the client, don't have to speak about the particularities of which piece of property,
mm-hmm.
which a bank account, which stock or bond or investment firm or whatever it happens to be. And when you get that specific in your will, you likely are going to create a circumstance where you pick it up in 3 years or 5 years and you see that those things have changed because, goodness gracious, Wells Fargo used to be Wachovia.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
RBC Centura is now PNC. I mean, these things are changing all the time. And so it's best not to put the names of companies and the names of even addresses change. You identify the property as ABC Street.
Mm-hmm.
The county tax office comes in here and changes the numbers. I mean, these kinds of things happen.
Sounds best to paint it with a broad stroke rather than specific painting there.
Correct.
Good.
Unless again, you had one of those, quote, specific bequests.
That's right. Okay.
And if you have that, you're carving that out up at the very top, as we've discussed, before you even get to the residuary.
Yeah, that's very good. And as you said, too, those specific requests are rare, but nonetheless, they are possible. So you've outlined the 4 points there. Let's take a break here at this point of our conversation. And if you wish to continue the conversation later after the show, call Cecil at Harvell and Collins, 252-726-9050, 726-9050, here in Moorhead City, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be back with more Let's Talk Legal after this brief timeout. Don't go anywhere. Let's Talk Legal. On the phone with us is Cecil Harvell from Harvell & Collins, and you can reach the firm by calling 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. You know, Cecil, I was thinking that this time of the year, the holidays, families gather, and it's probably a good time to maybe have this conversation about last will, or just take it out and, like you said, dust it off and just review and see what changes have occurred over the last couple of years or so. This has been a tumultuous year in 2020, mm-hmm. but a good time to yep. reflect and look ahead.
Sure. There's no question about that. I do get the question quite often about, you know, should I share my document with my beneficiary? And that's a very personal decision. But I would say that if you can share your intention, then do so. But if you can't, let's don't feel guilty about it. The circumstances are such that you just feel more comfortable keeping the situation private. So that is, Mike, an issue out there for all of our listeners, and it's a personal one, and it's one that, you know, they might need some counsel with, some discussion with their lawyer privately about, you know, should I or should I not, or do I not want to share the terms of my document with my beneficiaries. The next section of a will has to do with the whole, what we will call a holdback. I mean, clearly if there's some way that some of the percentage of the assets, a third, if you have three beneficiaries, a third, and a third, mm-hmm. and then one of the three die but has children, and so the third goes to those children, and one of those children now is 12 years old, then there needs to be a holdback to hold that share of the minor child until such time as they become of majority age. Majority age in North Carolina is 18, and most clients will change that holdback to either 21 or 25 years old yeah. to give the child a little bit more time to get into adulthood. But there certainly should be in every last will and testament, in its structure, if you will, which is what we're talking about this morning, there should be a holdback for any child that is of, you know, minor age.
Is that the same as saying what you just illustrated there, the example of the minor? Is that a trust? Then you'd put that money in a trust, the hold for that minor?
Yes.
Okay. That makes
yes.
yeah, that makes sense. And you don't have to release it right at the age of legal, where it's legal in North Carolina. You can say the kid's going to mature, but I'm going to give it to him at 25 or 26 because, you know, they've got a lot of growing to do yet. They're not yeah. there at 18. That's a good
well,
point.
Well, you can and you do, but it has to be in writing in the will. Otherwise, if it's not within the document, these provisions that we're speaking about, then it would be distributed at 18. And we see a lot of that, as you can imagine, because of the fact that there either isn't any will whatsoever, or this particular provision is not maybe in the wills that we see. So this is an important provision that it's best that it not get overlooked, mm-hmm. and we just call it a holdback until the child reaches, you know, a little bit older age, usually, as I said, 21 or 25. The next provision or section of a will would be the appointment of the fiduciary. We've talked a lot about this on the program through the years, but absolutely you must appoint a fiduciary. And a fiduciary is someone who's going to, you know, handle your estate, settle your estate, pay your bills, marshal together this residuary, again, that we spoke of earlier. Read and enforce this memorandum with regard to tangible property. And so this person is known as your executor.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we want to name someone or co-executors. We certainly can do that, name two people or one person. And then we want to back them up with what we would call an alternate so that, you know, if John Doe isn't living, then Mary Doe can be the executor. We can also, and many times do, use even a third alternate. So John is first, Mary is second, and then Bob is third. So we have the appointment of the executor, very, very important provision. And this, many times, Mike, would be that provision that when you dust it off, 5 years later or 7 years later, you think, oh my goodness, I can't have Bob anymore. You know, Bob isn't with us.
Right.
Or Bob has become, you know, too old, or Mary was involved in an accident, or, you know, she's moved away very, very, very far away, and I have lost touch with Mary, so I better find a new executor. This is a pretty common provision mm-hmm. that causes people to come in and make a change.
And we've talked about this, as you mentioned, over the years on this show, but the executor does get compensated for their time and effort. Is it at mm-hmm. this point the author of the will determines that compensation rate? I know it's by statute, but there's a range. Is it done at this point or later?
No, that's the author of the will or the testator and or the lawyer who's drafting the will cannot change the statutory law. The law is that the executor commission is to be reviewed by the clerk of court and within their discretion awarded any percentage up to no more than 5%. Now, the method of that payment can be discussed in the will. In other words, it can be paid by periodic payments. It can be paid at any particular time and then approved by the clerk when the estate is closed. The maker of the will can also say that it is their wish, desire, that the clerk award the full 5%. After all, the maker of the will knows the nature and extent and circumstances of their estate and may have an opinion about how the discretion of the clerk should be exercised. And therefore, there can be some what we might call precatory language about when it's paid, how it's paid, and how much. But ultimately, that authority is going to be with the clerk of court.
Let's take our last break on that note here, and we'll come back with our closing statement on this important topic about the last will and testament. And we're talking with Cecil Harvell from Harvell & Collins. You can reach Cecil after the show by calling 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. Cecil, we have about less than a minute to go. We have a minute and a half to go. I'll give it your
time. Well, we've got just enough time to talk about the last section, which is the section that we just finished up was the appointment of the executor.
Mm-hmm.
The last section, more or less, would be then the powers of the executor. So there would be this provision that says that I hereby grant, having appointed, you know, Joe and Mary as my executor, I now hereby give them the authority to do all of the following things. And of course, this is all of these provisions, each and every one is very important. But here again is a very important one in terms of, you know, if you don't grant the authority to the executor, then the executor has to go before the clerk of court and ask to sell the car, ask to liquidate the stock, ask to, quote, sell the property.
Yep.
So you don't want that to occur.